Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Lawyering Up. My co-host, Jared Ferrantino, with me, you know, once again. We're under the stay at home. So, you know, we're all doing this by Zoom. And today we have a very special guest. We have the president of Wilkes University, Paul Adams. Paul is a dear friend of mine. I'm on the board of trustees of Wilkes University, and Paul is somebody that I've known now since I was at Wilkes University, almost 25 years ago. Time certainly does fly. He was absolutely a mentor to me when I was at the university and has just been a tremendous, tremendous person in my professional and personal life since I was at Wilkes University. Paul is, he's a 77 grad, right? The 1977 graduate of Wilkes. And right now you're the seventh president of Wilkes, correct?
Well, I'm the interim president. Whether they're going to consider me the seventh or not, I imagine remains to be seen. But at least I'm doing the job for this year, which is probably the greatest professional privilege I could have had. So,
and probably challenge it, as well. Paul has a tremendous background. Pulled up your bio, Paul, here, and it's just amazing some of the accomplishments that you've had over your distinguished career.
Paul, you're the first Harvard educated guest we've had. Eddie and I are used to being smarter than our guests, so today's going to be pretty interesting.
Jared, I was just going to say, hands down, Paul is absolutely the smartest guest ever had, and way smarter than the co-host, by the way.
Well, you know what? Something. Well, our last guest was Attorney Michael Lombardo, the head of EMS committee for our COVID-19 team. And something Michael says, he's a big Yankee fan, and he gets beat up a lot of times because everybody says the Yankees buy their talent. And when I was reading your background, Michael's response to that criticism is always the same. The Yankee talent is homegrown, and it grows up their minority system. Paul, your career has been a really well-made path of progression through the administration of Wilkes. You've worn every hat possible. I was looking at your background. Yeah. You were the dean of resident life. You were the liaison for a Middle States team, which is, if anybody's ever been through a Middle States evaluation, which I have both as a student through the years, knows that that's like being audited by the IRS on steroids. So we know that your passion for education and accountability, but really your path to the presidency of Wilkes has been one really in touch with the students. And for Eddie to say he's known you all these years really is a testament to your relationship with the kids. And it really comes out in your biography, which is a very impressive resume, I must say. And it's an honor to have you with us. And really, one of the goals of having you on today was certainly to introduce the leadership of Wilkes, which is the proud small university, in quotes, small university that we have here in Luzerne County. It's large by our standards, but really acquaint people with how, number one, Wilkes is combating the COVID crisis and at the same time looking forward, maybe into a whole new world right now. But really, to get right into it, as we sit here today in April of 2020, what's changed since March of 2020?
Yeah.
I think it's pretty safe to say that the life that we all knew and before March, or I would say March, the coronavirus has changed dramatically, and it will never be the same again. Certainly for our young people, and I tell them that this is a generation-defining moment. And the Wilkes that they left on March 13th, which was when we finally closed the campus, you know, won't be the Wilkes that we're all going to return to. And that's certainly the case for our students, for our faculty, and for our staff. We're all going to be changed in so many ways that we would never have anticipated.
I think despite the fact that physically classes aren't being held there, kids aren't attending class there, how has Wilkes continued their semester?
Well, it was such a quick pivot. You know, none of us had any sense as to where this was going to wind up when we started this. You know, we first started our preparations and thinking about this, I think it was around February 17th when we first put out our first communication to the campus, just anticipating some travel difficulties because of what was going on in China and beginning to show up in Europe. And we had some spring break trips that were coming up at the end of February and in early March. And we just, you know, felt it was our duty to let everybody know that there are some issues out there that the government is wanting us to pay attention to. And so as you make your travel plans, as you participate in any of our trips, these are the things that we should be mindful of. And, you know, we started that on February 17th. And then we eventually realized as we got closer to March that, you know, we were really going to need some sort of committee to really to be thinking about this as it seemed to get more serious at that point by the week. And so we had created a small task force that began thinking about how we would respond on campus and then what we would need to do as our students and our faculty and staff traveled around during the spring breaks. It's been kind of a receding horizon, though. Everything that we've prepared for, the COVID just moved further away
and
more and more challenging and more difficult. So, you know, we would make plans and put policy in place. And then, you know, the next day or the next hour, it would change on us. And, you know, it was just a constant sense of needing to figure out how we were going to get our students communicated with and our faculty and staff communicated with. But, you know, I remember, you know, Eddie was would have been with us for the board meeting at the beginning of March. And at that point, you know, I thought, well, I probably should talk a little bit about this in my president's report. And I did, and just wanted to make sure everybody knew that we were thinking about this and beginning to make plans. I think none of us ever expected that it would.
Now, Paul, do you remember what happened at the board meeting? And Jared, this is really interesting. Like when Paul talks about how fast moving this was. So Paul's giving his report, and basically the committee had established kind of a three-tier plan. And basically, I'm paraphrasing it, but, you know, if the COVID ever got to Luzerne County or close to Luzerne County, when we started the meeting that day, there were zero cases in Pennsylvania. By the time we ended the Board of Trustees meeting that day, they had the first case in Montgomery County, the second case in Wayne County, and then that night there was another case in Delaware County.
And Paul, how long are your meetings?
Yeah. It was unbelievable.
We're all taking our cues from the virus itself. And one of the challenges besides continuing education, which is a big challenge, but continuing remote education is one thing. Part of what you've done in your career, and one of the things I saw, which is a true feather in the cap of Wilkes, is they have a 94% job placement rate. So any parents out there listening or kids looking to go to college, that's the name of the game. You want to get a job after that investment. So Wilkes has done tremendous in that regard. What are you doing with regard to the continuing academic counseling, job placement kind of things? Certainly athletics is clearly discontinued at the university level. So what are the kind of things you're doing beyond the classroom, some of the services you offer at the university?
Sure. Well, we really tried to move to a complete remote operation. So there really is nobody working on campus except our essential personnel, which is mostly folks that are working in food service, our police department, or on our facilities staff. I'm probably one of the few people that does come into the office every day. So everybody else is at home and working and being able to fulfill their responsibilities that way. So you talked about our Office of Career Services, which includes also our experiential education program with internships. And so students continue to work with the Career Services Office and hoping to be able to find employment upon their graduation. Of course, all the expectations people had 2 months ago have changed dramatically as the economy has changed. And, you know, it's going to be so much more difficult, an environment in which to find work after commencement than it was what we anticipated heading into this semester. But, you know, we've had some occasions where some young people have been able to continue to do their internships if they could do them remotely. We've allowed that to happen. We've gone through all this in stages. You know, when we first started all of these arrangements, we thought about, well, you know, if a company's going to stay open and the students can go there and work and feel safe about it, we were going to allow that. But then as the governor's orders became more and more restrictive, you just realized that just wasn't ever going to happen. So we've allowed internships to continue, but only when they could be done remotely. So, you know, Sharon Castano and Carol Bosak, who staffed that office, continue to be available to students, you know, whether it be through phone consultations, email consultations, the Zoom chats, or the you know, the Google opportunities that there are. Any of these are formats that can be used, and you know, I think they probably continue to do the online interviewing and mock interviews that they've always done, the resume checks, the all those different kinds of things.
You know, Paul, one of the questions that I have, and I know you have a tremendous network of presidents across the country, and I know you communicate with them on a regular basis. You know, what are you all talking about in terms of what the fall is going to kind of look like on campus? What are some of the challenges that universities across the country are going to face, from dorm life to, as Jared mentioned, athletics? Take us through like some of those conversations that you all are having so that we can kind of get an idea of what the new normal might look like.
Yeah. Well, I think it's an extraordinary conversation to be having at this point. And I think the thing that crosses across every conversation is just the uncertainty. And none of us know exactly what we're planning for. So we're really engaged in a lot of scenario planning at this point. You know, we're thinking about a fall and thinking about our budgeting and our financing and preparing. I think we've got 7 or 8 different scenarios that we're working on, of possibilities of things that could happen, depending upon, you know, what the size of our incoming class is, whether we're going to be able to bring people back residentially, whether you're going to be able to even come back, or whether we're going to have to be teaching remotely in the fall. I mean, I think you hear more and more discussion about people thinking, yeah, what's that going to look like if we can't open the residence halls back up in the fall? People are thinking about their incoming classes and how is this going to influence the decision making of young people and their family as they decide, do I still want to go away to college and live in a residence hall? Or at this time of extraordinary change, would I rather stay closer to home and maybe wait this out until there's a vaccine, or there are new protocols in place that make me feel safer living in a communal working environment? So, you know, all those things are factoring into our thinking right now. You know, we talk about, God, is anybody going to want to live in a double or triple room? Is everybody going to have a single? Obviously, we don't have enough single rooms, but you wonder just exactly, you know, what this is going to be like for us. You know, we know that there are some of our students who are going to choose not to come back because they're going to want to make the decision to stay closer to their families. And I suspect that that's going to be the case with a lot of local young people who are going away residentially to schools in other areas. And so we early on developed a COVID emergency grant for students who are thinking they want to stay home and want to be a transfer student to Wilkes, or if they want to change their plans and come in as an incoming student. We're trying to recognize that and make it as possible as we can for those students to be a part of Wilkes. So, you know, perhaps, you know, that increases the number of commuting students that we have here in the fall. But, you know, certainly there's capacity to allow that. And, you know, Wilkes pretty much started as a commuting institution. So we'll go back to our roots a little bit.
When you think about all the things you have to consider, Paul, as the head of a university, I mean, you get a headache when you think about your facilities operations. You have staff, you have professional staff, you have support staff, you have students, you have partnerships in business, you have contracts to keep. Really, you are in a position that I think universities, hospitals, certain types of industry have been so challenged. I mean, the whole world's been challenged. But when you think about the planning, I think it was Boston University, the president of Boston University discussed the concept of maybe having to go remote for the fall semester. And really, it was on CNN. It really got legs. But a lot of people at your level have echoed the sentiment. I mean, you don't plan a week out, 2 weeks out. You guys budget for years and years to come. And you have, I'm sure, capital campaigns. I saw you completed a strategic plan before President Lay left. Institutions such as yours plan in 5 and 10 year increments, maybe even more, which is so difficult when you're stifled by a challenge like this. And I think it's important that people hear Governor Wolf and President Trump, sometimes self-imposed, get very criticized, but a lot of people don't consider the moving parts to so many of the decisions they have to make. And in your world, there's a lot of that too. And just hearing it, so I could see, you know, we could see you. I could see it in your face as you're taking us through the difficult things you have to do. And as the virus kind of dictates, you have to be able to move with it. And it's a tremendous challenge, but a testament to your leadership. And I'll tell you, if you could see this university through, that interim title better go far away.
Well, Paul, just so you know, sometimes Jared doesn't really ask a question. He just kind of wants to. That's it. That was more of a rhetorical question from Jared. But one thing I did, you brought this up before, Paul, and I wrote it down because Wilkes has a number of international students. Mm-hmm. What are you hearing from those kids who now have gone back to their host countries? And, you know, we have a tremendous program with Panama and all these other countries. Take us through some of like what you're hearing on a global scale, because Wilkes, even though we're a tremendous local university, does really have this global reach. So what are you hearing from them and some of the challenges that they're facing and how, if they're different than what we're going through right here?
Yeah, I think all of higher education in America is really preparing for a dramatic drop in the number of international students that are going to be on our campuses in the fall. You know, we have a lot of students. You mentioned Panamanian students. That's an interesting story to talk about in itself through this. But, you know, we have a lot of students who come to us sponsored by the Saudi government and the Kuwaiti government. The Kuwaitis in particular have been very interested in getting their young people home as quickly as they can. I think we have a number of students who are still here in their apartments around the campus, but they seem to be making arrangements to take them back home. And I think some of that is going to happen within the next several days. Some of them have chosen to go home on their own already. You know, unfortunately, because we're working remotely, they can continue with their studies. It's a bigger challenge for them because of the time difference. And if an instructor is trying to do things synchronously, time change can make that a little bit difficult. But clearly, you know, we're not planning on much of, certainly no new international students here in the fall. You know, and whether in these sponsored situations, the government are going to allow their students to come back to school in the fall, I guess that kind of remains to be seen. Yeah, you mentioned the Panamanian students, and
yeah,
have probably about 94 Panamanian students that were studying with us at the beginning of this spring semester, and they're at very different stages of their career at Wilkes. Some are just the beginning of their undergraduate careers, but others are in what we call an intensive English program. So they're developing their English skills so that they can progress into the undergraduate work on campus. And, you know, right now we have 87 of those young people living with us. We kept them here through this. And I think that was probably the hardest decision I had to make, was whether or not to send those young people back to Panama.
Right.
We talked about doing that, and there was a lot of consideration for doing that. And you just realized there was no way we were going to be able to assure their safe passage all the way back to their provinces in Panama, because there weren't enough flights for all of them. There were going to be 3 stops, and not all these young people are yet proficient in the English language to get them. Once they got to Panama, they were going to have to be quarantined for 2 weeks. They were shutting borders down between the provinces in Panama. And so, you know, we just made the decision. We're just going to keep them here. They're continuing in classes, doing their work remotely now. We tried to consolidate them in as few buildings while keeping them as socially distant as we can. They really don't have much contact with the outside world. But for that reason, we've got our food service. Aramark continues to come in every day, and they prepare their meals for them. And so they're nourished. They're going to class, and I think they're going a little bit stir crazy in the residence hall. But but they're great young people and they're persevering and recognize the privilege they have, I think, to be in the United States and having an education. And so they're seizing this opportunity and they're here witnessing this in this historic moment, as we all are.
What are some of the things that you think, you know, I don't want to say they're positive things, but what do you think are some of the opportunities, you know, or lessons universities like Wilkes, that, you know, moving forward from an online learning perspective, what is it going to look like? What can we do better? What is Wilkes doing to kind of, because it's going to be, you know, as we said, it's going to be a new, you know, new normal. So what, you know, what are some of the things that you, as you look out on the horizon, you say, you know, geez, this is interesting and we can really learn from this particular situation.
Well, I think all of us, you know, first and foremost, have a new appreciation for all of our relationships with one another and how we
very true.
Took those for granted. And oh my God, the, you know, just to be able to spend time with your colleagues face to face and enjoy going to Starbucks on campus or having a meal in the dining hall or walking across campus with a student. God, you cherish those things now and you can't wait for the opportunity to come back to them. I hope that's one of the greatest lessons that comes out of this, is just that we all have a greater appreciation for one another and tend and care for the relationships that we have. And Wilkes has always been an institution that's been rooted in the power of relationship to enhance learning. So I hope that allows us to even take that to another level. But, you know, obviously, I think that, you know, you had to make such a quick pivot to the remote learning. And, you know, in a lot of cases, we'd be hard pressed to say that in every class that, you know, this is true online learning. You know, we're having to figure, faculty are having to figure it out as they go. And a lot of them are doing things in a very traditional way, holding classes, taping lectures, those kinds of things, which may not be the state of the art online education. But I think all of our faculty are, we're all being forced out of our comfort zones. And I think that that's a good thing. And I think we're all going to realize that the tools and the opportunities that technology brings to enhance learning. So I think there is going to be that opportunity that comes out of this. And I think a greater appreciation for that. One of the things that I've been so impressed with is just how everybody has stepped up and gone the extra mile to make this happen. The number of challenges and complaints, I won't say that we haven't had them, but they've really been minimal. And people have accepted the difficulties of this moment and stepped up and made this happen. You know, I think one of the lessons that I'm certainly going to take away, and I think most of us are going to take away, though, is just the socioeconomic inequity in our society. This move to online learning is demonstrating, you know, the have and the have nots for us. You know, we have young people who come here with some economic disadvantage. And, you know, we had to scramble at the very beginning when they got home to make sure that they could have the same access to their classes that everybody else could have. So making sure that they had the hardware, the software, and the hotspots or remote Wi-Fi access. You know, that took us a couple of weeks to figure out, and, you know, given some of the supply chain challenges, making sure that we could get that equipment into their hands. I think we're in pretty good shape now, but you still have some young people that are living in big families and parents are having to work from home and there's one computer and people, your younger brothers and sisters are trying to go to school. Mom and dad are trying to do their work from home. And a faculty member is expecting that they're going to be on class at a certain hour. It's just so hard to think about getting all that fixed in such a short amount of time. We have, I think we counted up, we had like 980 undergraduate sections of courses that had to be transitioned to a remote learning situation. And the faculty have just done it in a way that, as I said earlier, has been done without a lot of really difficult moments for us, but we're still working through some things. But for the most part, it's working. And I think we, like other schools, have recognize that it's an extraordinary moment for these students and that not everybody still has the same access and opportunity. And so we, like a lot of other schools, have moved to a different optional grading system for this spring semester. And, you know, a lot of schools have gone to a pass-fail option. We're calling ours SPW, so a student can get a satisfactory, if they choose, they can still get a numerical grade if they want it. But if they don't want that, they could choose to a satisfactory if they're a C or 2.0 or better. If they were,
I wish they had that when I was in school. But Paul, one of the things, my kitchen is currently a second grade classroom, a seventh grade classroom, and my wife teaches at a local university, and it's also a lecture hall too. So you can imagine the fun we're having. The DA's office / private practice is in an, it's been relegated to a closet in the house. But one of the things that is certainly part of the Wilkes reputation is that student teacher ratio and that personal relationship. And I know, Eddie, you experienced it there. Yep. You know, they say it's 12 to 1 in class sizes of 21. And if a kid misses a class or two, they're noticed and they're expected to participate in class. How are your professors and staff trying to maintain that despite the fact that it's distant?
Yeah, well, you know, we have a learning management system. It's called D2L. And so the faculty who are using that to administer their classes, it's very easy to monitor who's coming online and doing their work and who's not. There's a digital record of all that. But, you know, as Ed would remember from his days at Wilkes, I know he would never have missed class, but we have a pretty good relationship between our student affairs staff and our faculty. And when a young person is missing class in a pattern, you know, they'll be pretty quick to let the student affairs folks know or their academic advisor knows so that
check
on them. You know, and those same things are still going on now. I see the report. I mean, just because I was in student affairs, I still get some same reports that I did last year. And I still see, you know, the dean's writing to faculty and checking on why Jared Ferentino has been in his online class for the last three sessions and then some of it is students have trouble getting online. And then that triggers us to be able to go out and make contact and try and find out what's going on. Our coaches have been extraordinary in terms of their follow-up with their student athletes. We have over 550 student athletes.
I was just going to ask what are they doing? Like, how are they doing it? Are they, you know, making them work out? Like, what is going on with that athletics?
Well, it's D3 week. So they've been celebrating D3 week this week. And you can see it in the social media, whether Instagram or Twitter. And I know that when I was on Instagram yesterday, I was seeing some students, posting their digital work or their workouts to this digital format and, you know, showing them working out and giving shout outs to our strength and training coach. And I think they continue to do the best they can in this distant format. But, you know, we would have been in the heart of the spring season right now, and that's all lost. And it's so heartbreaking for those student athletes. But we'd also be in our non-traditional season for our fall student athletes who would, you know, they get 15 or 16 practice sessions in the spring and have one game date. And so, you know, they're missing out on all of that also. And then you can see as the nation struggles to figure out what it's going to do with its professional sports, you know, all of these young people and the coaches are just trying to figure out what's their fall going to look like and when's it going to start? How is it going to work?
You know, Paul, I just had a flashback when you were talking about missing classes of spending some time in Dean Lampe and Dean Allen's office my freshman year.
They got you back on track, though, right, Eddie? Well, that's debatable, too, I think.
The jury is still out. It's always a work in progress. Always a work in progress. Paul, one of the things that Jared and I, we've been trying to, you know, find out from people that we've been talking to is, you know, what are you doing on a personal level? You and your wife, Jean, and in order to kind of manage, obviously, the stress that you're dealing with is just unbelievable. But what are you doing on a personal level to kind of manage through some of the, you know, some of the stress of the day and any techniques or tips? We have a small viewership, but it's very robust, very robust. So I'm sure that they would love to hear how you're coping with this COVID situation.
Yeah. Well, I'm very blessed that Gene and I live on campus. And so that allows me to be very close to the campus and be able to wander around here and not have that longing to be to this place that is so important to me, that I love so much. And I've been blessed to, as you can see, to come to the office every day and be able to kind of manage things from here. And so
you still have great hair. Jared is very jealous right now.
Yeah. His vanity is trying to figure out the haircut situation. Yeah. My wife, I have her giving me a haircut every Saturday. So trying to figure that out.
That's great.
No, you know, I've always been someone who gets up every morning and works out. So that's probably one of the best things that I do. Is it's the only time I know I'm ever going to get it done. So, So yeah, it's usually by 6 o'clock I'm on the bike. So I'm
a lot of it feels like being back in school. I don't know if it's the same for you guys, but there was a lot of self-discipline with regard to getting up, getting worked out, getting your tasks done for the day. Without, you know, I don't have all of the court deadlines that I typically deal with, and I know Eddie, you have some, but not necessarily all. So a lot of it is self-motivation, and that's a little bit of a change because so much of what we do is dictated a lot of times by third parties, you know, the court schedule, you know, the opposing counsel. That's been a challenge or a change. I wouldn't say it's been a challenge, but the workout thing I think is real important. And the people that we're dealing with, certainly on the crisis committee, and everybody's saying the same thing, and you have to stay active to manage the novelty of the decisions and the things that are coming down the pike here, you know, from a personal level and a professional level. I think that's very important. And that's been pretty consistent by everyone, I think, that we've asked or talked to about it. Yeah. So I'm glad to hear that you're doing that.
Yeah. Trying to stay as much, you know, I try and come to the office at the same time every day and go home at the same time. You know, it's the treat is I get to go home and have lunch at home with Gene every day. That's a nice treat that I never used to be like, would go to the dining hall every day, but get to have lunch together that often. So it's, you know, it's given us a lot more time together. And that's one of the blessings of all this. I think that as you talked about earlier, Ed, the blessings of the time with the family is something we'll have to cherish and take away from this.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I've been journaling throughout this and I was just kind of flipping through, you know, I've got my journal, you know, here, and I was kind of flipping through it the other day, just the kind of the beginning of all this and just like the moments of, you know, teaching our girls how to play, you know, Rummy 500. And now, you know, now 3 weeks later, the 11-year-old's kicking everybody's butt. You know, so I mean, it's just, you know, and just like, you know, spending those, you know, cooking together. I mean, just simple things like cooking together and, you know, and just trying to find things to do to engage everybody in the house. So that everybody, you know, just trying to take care of each other, you know, more. And that was one thing that I, you know, I wanted to ask before, because it's one thing that I think Wilkes, and I'm biased. That doesn't mean I'm wrong. It's one of the things that I think Wilkes does better than any university out there, hands down. And that's providing really good quality mental health services to our students. And I know it's so important, and I really mean that. And I know that during this time, obviously the stress of the students has to be just amped up unbelievably. But from that perspective, Paul, how is Wilkes dealing with that aspect of this situation with those students who have some mental health issues that they're going through?
Well, yeah, obviously, you know, we have a staff of counselors on campus who work with our young people on a daily basis. And, you know, that typically is a face-to-face counseling situation. And, of course, that's not even possible at this point now. At this point, where we can, you know, they're able to do telecounseling. I mean, there's some sensitivities about doing that because of state licensure and trying to be very careful about. Only we haven't jumped into this. I don't believe last I asked the question last week, we weren't doing any video counseling, especially like with Zoom, because, you know, Zoom, I don't believe has HIPAA or FERPA. I don't think it's encrypted, but there are some like BlueJeans, I believe, is encrypted. You could use if you needed it, but I think we've been doing most of it by telephone where we can. And, we've also had this service that was an after hours service that was a kind of a call in crisis line that, mm-hmm. that students would always have access to, which is it's a national firm that does that for us. And, you know, they're available 24 hours a day now too. So if students wanted to take advantage of that, they can do that also. But
that's just another issue people don't think about. And again, my headache's getting worse as I think about the difficult things you have to deal with there. But another thing that, Eddie, I don't know if you saw this, and I know that you have doctoral programs there and degrees that then dovetail into licensure situations where people are sitting for state license examinations. I received a petition this week in the mail. Eddie, I don't know if you got it, that the kids that are sitting for the bar exam, the people sitting for the bar exam, the candidates sitting for the bar exam in July, are seeking to have their law licenses essentially, I don't know if grandfathered in is the word, but basically forego the need for the bar exam because of placing them into the workforce. It's a compelling letter. You should read the letter.
Oh, man.
How the world needs these new licensed attorneys. But, you know, the one thing about a multi-year education like that is that's part of your planning. You know, I get out of nursing school, I get out of my pharmacy program, I sit for my boards. Now you have people that may sit dormant for a couple of months before they get into that licensing examination. It's going to be difficult. I don't know that I'm for foregoing the requirement of the examination, but again, that's another challenge your students are going to deal with, maybe some teachers are going to have to address as well.
Yeah, certainly the one place where that has been most problematic for us is with our pharmacy students who were in the midst of their final rotation when this all really hit. And so most of them, not everyone, but most of them haven't been able to finish their last clinical rotation. And the way that the pharmacy accreditation body is working, they're not going to waive that. And so these young people are going to have to make sure that this summer that they fulfill that. So some of our pharmacy graduates may not be done with their degree requirements on the date that we're conferring our degrees. Now, fortunately, we had enough hours in for our nursing clinicals and we had enough hours in for our student teachers so that, you know, they can receive their degrees when we confer them on May 16th. So that's been a blessing and we're very fortunate for that. But certainly in the healthcare professions, I think that people aren't going to be very tolerant of them not having licensure exams.
No, that could be an issue down the road, I think.
Yeah, no question about it. No, I have not seen that letter asking not to take
the phone. I'll send it to you.
But
Make a compelling case. You got to read it.
Geez. But if I had the choice to forego the bar exam, I would have definitely not taking the ball. You know, it was certainly the hair on the back of my neck stands up when I even think about having to take the bar exam.
You can't blame them for trying, right?
No, not at all. You know, Paul, one of the last things that I wanted to ask you and wanted to have you share with our listeners and our viewers is you've been such an integral part of not only Wilkes University, but the Wilkes-Barre community and all the boards that you've sat on and living downtown. What do you see from a community perspective are going to be some of the biggest challenges that Wilkes-Barre might face as we start to reopen the economy? What do you think are going to be some of the real challenges that are going to need to be met immediately?
Well, what comes to my mind right away is I've been spending a lot of time with fellow presidents, but also with my colleagues at Wilkes, thinking about some of this CARES Act legislation and making sure we have access to what we need and some of the things that are still being proposed. But, you know, we were working today on trying to get an opportunity to be part of this Main Street lending program, which right now seems to be not available to nonprofits, and trying to see if higher ed could have an opportunity. But what all that does is it draws out what an economic engine Wilkes and Kings are and LCC for the downtown community. So you know, how many of these businesses in downtown are going to suffer and struggle because the Wilkes, Kings, and LCC students aren't here to support them? And you hope that the resources that the federal and state governments are able to provide are going to be able to tide these folks over until we all get back to full strength. So, I worry about that. You know, we've come a long way to trying to develop Wilkes-Barre as a college town, and you don't want to regress. As Wilkes-Barre goes, so goes Wilkes and Kings. As Wilkes and Kings goes, so goes Wilkes-Barre. It's
very true. A
relationship. And so we all need to be at our strongest for the economic and social and vitality of in our quality of life here. So we need to support one another.
Well, Paul, it's been wonderful. Jared, we got a couple minutes left. You have anything else?
Just that beard is getting really long, Eddie. I don't know what's going on there. Nothing to do with this epidemic. You got to shave.
I'll tell you one thing, though, that's been very interesting. My hair's gotten darker.
Good for you.
I don't know why. My hair's gotten darker, you know? So
this is my quarantine tuxedo. It's just a vest, just like an Under Armour workout short and pants without a belt. I can tell you that. It's just workout clothes every day. Any situation that we confront in quarantine, I'm dressed for it. So, but really, Paul, I'm glad we got to meet. I think that I have a tough, tough road ahead of you. But I don't know you nearly as long as Eddie does. I'm familiar with your background. I am very confident with you at the wheel at Wilkes. I think that the fact that you see the relationship of Wilkes and Wilkes-Barre and Kings and LCC in particular, you know exactly what you're doing. And I'm glad we got the opportunity to meet this way and look forward to seeing you again. And we will have you back to talk about all the wonderful things you're going to accomplish at Wilkes beyond COVID-19.
Well, I hope you'll have our new president on.
We will. Yes.
Because Greg Cant will be here in June, and I'm looking forward to him becoming seventh president.
What is your plan then? Do you go back to the position you previously
had? Yeah, I'm going to go back to student affairs as vice president for student affairs and hang out.
We're not letting him go.
Yeah,
I mean, that's it. He's not allowed to go anywhere.
Yeah.
We'll have Dr. Cant absolutely. As soon as he takes over, we'll have him on as well. But Paul, I mean, this has been an honor for me. I mean, you are a dear friend, and when you talked about relationships, I'm looking forward to seeing you again and being on campus again and having a drink and being able to just have a conversation. Those are some of the things I miss. Jared and I, we would get together every Friday and have a cigar. And you don't realize just how special just those moments are. So it really, thank you so much. This has just been, this has been tremendous. So thank you.
Just one thing I wanted to make sure nobody thought that I was a Harvard graduate from the beginning. I'm a Penn grad.
But you were a Penn grad. We went to the Harvard management. You were through a Harvard management program.
After a few weeks in the summer. So, Harvard pedigree here.
Yeah,
because Penn's any less, Jared, you know?
Right.
That's a lesser pedigree somehow.
Right.
Well,
thanks for clearing that up.
Yes.
Well, thank you again, Paul.
Thank you.
Stay safe. Everybody, thank you for listening and wash your hands. Yes. Wash your hands and wear a mask.
Exactly.